children and God, what happens as they grow older? Should they be looking for God? Should we be looking out for them looking for God? This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, connecting the dots between our kids and ourselves and a whole variety of other things. This happens to be episode number 586 of The Next Step. And if you're ready, I know we are. Let's take it together.
Is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by.
Hi, this is Susie with In His Shoes Ministries, welcoming you to our 12th year of broadcasting, The Next Step with Father Voskin. Since 2008, we have been producing these podcasts on a weekly basis for those who are seeking practical and deeper applications of their faith and spirituality in their lives today. Blending the most ancient traditions of Armenian Orthodoxy with the challenges of the 21st century, Father Voskin brings a distinctive and unique voice to the Christian conversation of peace, harmony, and love. Armadoxy is a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. So turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Well, welcome to our show today. I want to start off by offering a very sincere condolences to our dear friend Autumn, who's listening, I know, in Armenia, a regular, avid listener of our podcast. Autumn just lost his brother. And I am coming back from officiating at the funeral service. And I know, as difficult as it is to lose a family member, probably it's compounded so much more just that you're far away. You're not able to physically access the people that you love and care about. And just wanted to let you know that you're in our thoughts and our prayers. And may God rest his soul and grant comfort to you and all of the family members. Very sincere condolences and a lot of love coming out your way. On behalf of myself, my family, as well as the larger family, the In His Shoes family, and of course, the Next Step family. Well, today's show is going to take a little bit of a different twist. I had something else in mind when we were planning today's show, and then I got an email last night that kind of shook me up. And it shook me up because I realized that the answer wasn't as clear as it used to be. And by used to, well, not too long ago, but we are living in different times. And this is from a dear member of our church family and someone who has followed this ministry for many years. And out of respect for her privacy, I'm not going to share the entire email. Rather, I mean, it's going to give you highlights of it because I think it's so pressing and so important. Because what she's basically asking is a question that I think many, many of us are asking. And that's that I'm trying to keep God present in the lives of my children, but it's getting harder. There you have it. That's the premise. How do you keep God present in the lives of your children? And that transcends not just people who have young children, any children, just family. When you have, let's go even beyond that. How do you keep God real and alive in family, even if it's just husband and wife, even if it is grown children, but especially when you have young children, children, grandchildren, whatever they may be? We know that we are living in different times where, to say it plainly, it's not about theology. It's not about do you believe in God or not, but to actually to keep God in their lives. Okay, because you've been brought up with certain ideas, you know that they work, and then all of a sudden you're being challenged, and it's a world that is filled with just base blatant disrespect for human life, disrespect for one another. Did I put my finger right on it? Disrespect. That's what we're talking about. We're not talking about I believe, I don't believe. I mean, you could sit down and you can have a conversation with somebody about what you believe, what you don't believe, and it could be respectful. But today, in this day and age, it's outright disrespectful. So much so that you don't believe what I believe, you know, I'm entitled to inflict harm on you as well. And it's ridiculous why we've gotten to this point. I have my theories why we've gotten to this point, but maybe we'll scratch on those. But let me continue with what this dear listener writes, okay? She says, it's getting harder, outright difficult. She says, my children are not little anymore. Their brains are trying to explore the world. That's a good thing, right? Yeah, of course. I feel that I'm not doing enough to keep them Christian or even to let them believe in God. I don't know if I'm exaggerating or scared to lose God in our lives. What can I do? We go to Sunday school, but my children don't really like it. They go because they have a few friends there. And she goes on, like, what can I do to make my kids love God and believe in Him? Big, big, big question. And I know it concerns a lot of people, not just young mothers. But we're living in a time where everything is being challenged. And unfortunately, the answer that she has in this thing, my children go to Sunday school, we know that Sunday school does not answer that, because it is basically outside of reality. And this is what I mean by this. God bless our dear Sunday school teachers, staff, and we have so many beautiful schools. But what's happening is that we go to Sunday school and it's a separate reality. It's separate, just as our church is. You see, you've got this 168-hour week. And then we tell people, come to this church. And what is our church? It's basically some foreign language experience where you go in there. And there's beautiful, beautiful songs. No one's questioning that. Beautiful prayers, but they're basically inaccessible, right? They're in a different language. People wear different things inside of the church, different robes, garments, investments, and all of these have their explanations and they ride on a higher plane. But when it comes down to it, it's missing. It's missing from our daily expression. And so we find it very foreign when we go into an Armenian and to an Orthodox church. And then we're saying, okay, this is what God is. Remember a few weeks ago I did a podcast about this small little church that I had found on the Araradyan Plain. And it was just sitting there. It was a small, what was it, a 10 by 10, 15 by 15 little square made a chapel. People had made it. And I thought for a moment how odd it is that we find it important to define the spaces where we will worship God. In other words, inside of that chapel, there was a little altar area, there were candles, there was a picture of Jesus, there was a cross. And yet, outside of it was probably the most beautiful landscape of all creation. It's you were standing in the Garden of Eden, right at the foot of Mount Ararat. I mean, you're basically in paradise, but we find it important that we say, this is where you will find God and not here. So let's start off with that expression to understand that God is all around us in answer to this question. How do we make God real? How do we bring God into the lives of our children? How do we keep God in our lives of our children? Let's understand that God doesn't really go anywhere. It's we who travel away. And in fact, that's what she's asking in this email, right? That's what she's asking. Like, we're drifting apart. Life is making us move away. God doesn't go anywhere. God's there, right? We know God's there. But there are so many reasons to fall away. And I don't blame children. I've said many times, and I continue to say it, religion isn't for children. God is for children. Children are for God. But the religion, what we do is we package it in such a way. I mean, I read so much. Lately, I read this this blog by a blogger who's touting the beauty of atheism. And he or she, I think it's a she, it's called Mom and something, whatever. I don't feel like putting the blog down. It's interesting because I read it, and she makes some great, great points about, like, why she doesn't believe in God. But she doesn't believe in the God that I don't believe in. You know, she's talking about God being this way. Well, we've packaged God in such a way that it's absurd to believe in that. And I think about this often. You know, what Jesus brought to us is something so novel in the idea of faith, in the idea of belief of what God is. Just this past weekend, there was a huge article in LA Times, front page LA Times, on Dennis Prager. I have not read it yet. I read bits and pieces. I just want a little bit of time because I want to be able to explore it and kind of, because this is a guy that I identified several years ago as the modern day Pharisee. You know, is Pharisaic Judaism still around? People say, well, no, it's extinct. It went away at the time of Jesus. No, it's alive and well. And you listen to this guy, he's an ultra conservative talk show host who comes on. I don't know how syndicated he is, but he has this incredible presence on the internet. He has figured out how to market himself on the internet and spends a lot of money. This is what the article was talking about. He has videos that are seen by billions of people, including young people, ultra conservative, and he comes off with this idea that God is this way, and it's basically the Judaic God. It's God of Judaism. And his premise is that that's what the founders of this country, the United States, believed in, and here it is, and I'm presenting it to you. And he falls on into the category of wisdom. I'm teaching you wisdom. I'm not teaching you about God. Okay, that's fine, whatever you want to do. But it's completely Pharisaic Judaism. In other words, this is what I believe. I am correct. If you want to be correct, you will follow me. And you read the Woe to You Pharisees, Matthew chapter 23, Jesus talking about you blind guides. I mean, it exactly describes what he's all about. And I bring this up because we've packaged God in such a way that it's difficult to understand and difficult to accept in any rational terms. I mean, think about how we've packaged it, you know. And when it comes down to it, it's really the Judaic God that they're talking about. The criticisms that you hear about religion is about really about Judaism. I'm asking you to take a serious, serious look. You talk about some of the stories that we have that come out of the Old Testament about people experiencing these horrible, horrible situations. I mean, just take some of the most basic stories, like Noah's Ark. Armenians love Noah's Ark because it ends up landing on Mount Ararat. Yeah, Noah's people come out off of the Ark in Mount Ararat in Armenia. But aside from that, what a horrid story, right? Everybody in the world is horrible except for Noah and his family. And God in heaven decides that he's going to kill off everybody. I mean, really? Really? This is what we're teaching our children? God says, I'm going to kill everybody because everybody is horrible. So now we're going to understand the idea that God has this power to kill everyone and can do it in very physical terms, like creating these horrible events. And so now you're starting to make the link. Okay, well, I just heard about a hurricane that took place in the Bahamas. I just heard about an earthquake that took place in Indonesia. Do you suppose that Do you suppose that it was God who decided that, you know, today that there's no good people living in Indonesia anymore? That's why he's going to kill them? That's why this earthquake takes place? I mean, it opens the door, right? I mean, don't argue with me. I mean, I'm just telling you, if you buy into these stories, this is what you're going to get. And the story of Noah's Ark. Whoa. Nobody is good except for Noah and his family. And Noah puts everybody on this ark. And, oh, wait a minute. My neighbor's daughter just had a child a week ago. Oh, maybe that child is evil too? Well, I guess so, right? I guess so, because everybody's going to get wiped out except for Noah and his family. So, you know, it's difficult. Think of it from the mind of a child. We teach them these stories, and then you can start asking these questions, and you say, wait a minute, not everybody can be evil. And it's a horrible premise to begin your life thinking that everybody is evil. And yet, this man I was telling you about, Dennis Prager, his basic premise in life is that, you know, evil is real and people are evil and you have to be towards the good. And you look at what Jesus taught was exactly the opposite. Jesus said, first of all, there is no chosen people. We are all children of God. God is the creator, the author of life, and that life is inside each and every one of us. And everyone has accessibility. God is accessible to everybody. Yeah, not just an elite group of people. Not just people who share a common history, but God belongs to the world. The world is God's. I mean, it's beautiful when you understand Christianity. You understand that Jesus came and ushered in the new kingdom. In other words, things were going wrong. And here's what's interesting, if you want to put it in the context of Old Testament studies. And, I'll make my argument why you don't need to. But Old Testament is about they gave the laws. People didn't follow those laws. They gave prophets who said, look, this is the way it should be. People didn't want, they killed the prophets, and then so you get Jesus, the Son of God, who says that this is the way it is. Listen. Now, obviously, you could believe it or you don't have to believe it, but the message that Jesus had was truly a unique message that comes outside of Judaism. And it's important because when you understand it as such, you understand that we are all chosen. We are all the chosen people. People are chosen because we are created in the image of God. And so when you think about it in these terms, it's a little bit more accessible, and God doesn't need to go outside of our lives. This dear reader talks about taking our children to Sunday school. Think about what we teach in Sunday school. A lot of times the lesson plans, and I've seen them, are just about these Old Testament figures. And then, you know, what is it? Isaac and Abraham taking his son up on the hill and God saying, okay, I want you to kill your son. What? Yeah, I want you to kill your son. And we know how the story goes, right? He goes up, and just before he's going to kill him, God says, okay, no, you don't need to do, you proved yourself. What is that teaching us? What is that really teaching us? Teaching us that God is sitting there up in the cloud, playing this giant chess game, and let's see what the pawn will do right now. And let's see if we could push it a little bit. Sure, you can argue that it's teaching loyalty. It's teaching that God's command is first and foremost. Okay, you can make all those arguments. But what I'm telling you is that when you look at it from the eyes of a child, there's a lot of fear that builds up. What is the story that's being taught? There's so many beautiful stories, right? Jesus and the little children. How come we don't teach that, emphasize that more? How about the story of the Good Samaritan? Shouldn't that trump all else? Shouldn't that be the ultimate story that we teach people? How about the story of Jesus at the final judgment saying that, I don't know you because I was hungry and you didn't feed me? Now, to me, that's more important than talking about the five horsemen or the three horsemen and the thunder and lightning and people going to hell and burning and everything. Wait. It's very simple. I was hungry. You didn't feed me. I was thirsty. You didn't give me a drink. I was in prison. You didn't even visit me. Wait. When did we see you, Jesus? When did we see you hungry and didn't feed you? And Jesus said, when you did it for the least of my children, of my brothers, you've done it for me. I mean, he's basically equating himself with the rest of humanity, not somewhere up on a high pedestal, not sitting on some throne, but saying that, hey, when you did it for the least of my brothers, my children, you've done it for me. I mean, we get criticized a lot of times for talking about Jesus outside of life. And it's a valid criticism. Christianity, God, Jesus is inside of our lives, is part and parcel of our lives. And that's what we need to be talking about. And you know, one of the things about being part of the life, I've been very fortunate. Susan has worked with me very closely in all of the communities we've been to incorporate Sunday school in the life of the church, because we have an added difficulty. The whole concept of Sunday school is a foreign one within Orthodoxy and the Armenian Church. Actually, you know what? Let's do that the second portion of today's show. We'll talk a little bit about the whole manner in which we approach God, especially for the children. But let's leave this first portion to talking about how important it is to make God part and parcel of our lives right now. And by saying that, I'm not saying that God is outside, but we have abandoned God. We have created systems. We have created religions in such a way that God exists outside. And so to access God, you have to come inside our framework. You have to come inside my religion to understand God. And God's saying, what? Don't I belong to everything? Aren't I the God of the cosmos? So why are you trying to confine me with your words, with your traditions, with your dress? And maybe that's the beginning point of when we talk about our children. How do we keep God in their lives? Is to accept that God is all around them. One of the things that I have a hard time with when it comes to children, raising children, is the accessibility to everything else without our knowledge. And probably very appropriate to take a break right now to go to the song of the day, because when we were raising our kids, Susan and I, we were also raising another couple hundred kids. We were in Pasadena at the St. Gregory Church, and one of the most beautiful parts of that experience of those 6 years that we were there, we were also in charge of this day school, hundreds of kids. And I had the opportunity every morning to lead the assembly and to be with the children. I taught religion class and going in there. And it was just such a wonderful experience. Every Friday night, we would have the young people take over the entire parking lot. We'd had just hundreds of kids in the neighborhood. They would just come out. They'd make hot dogs and hamburgers. And we'd have Bible studies in the midst of this. It was just an atmosphere. I don't know how to describe it. It was a church come alive. And I'll never forget one of the experiences when we were sitting there. And at that time, much like we have today, the smartphone and the phenomena of the crooked neck, the scoliosis, you know how like when you bend over and you look out at a landscape of people, and you see people with their necks bent down because they are following their smartphone. They are reading some text. They are watching some videos, blah, 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 and they're doing all that. Well, in this time, in this day and age, it's about 25 years ago. Like in the, let's see, we were at St. Gregory, excuse me, about 20 years ago, in the late 1990s, the phenomena was earphones on your MP3 players. Actually, they had the small little cassette players, the Walkman. Then they came out with the CD Walkman, the Sony, and they had MP3 players. But basically, people had earphones. And this phenomena kind of caught me. Like, I thought to myself, wow, these kids have earphones. And who are these kids? You look around, they're my kids. There's a couple hundred of them. And you don't know what we see the earphones connected to their ears. We don't know what the other side is connected to. Uh-huh. Think about it. The earphone, it's being piped in right into their brain, right into their head, right into their ears, going right into their brain. And we don't know. We don't know what's being piped in. All you see is the wire going into this little machine. And what's on that cassette? What's on that CD player? What's on that MP3 file? Well, you know it's not the next step, right? But something is. Something is keeping their attention, much like the smartphones are doing today to all of us. Let's take a break right now. And since we're referring to this little portion of life where we brought these young people together, I'm going to share with you an album that we made. This is in 2002, and I made it with my dear friend Autumn Krikorian, who I know is listening in Armenia right now. He's the producer of this CD. It's with the Young Voices of the St. Gregory Armenian Church. We did an actual CD. Don't know what a CD is? We do. Okay, we made an actual album of Armenian liturgical songs, but it was all sang by the young children, by the ACYO, by the young church kids, who were not outside of the church, but they were inside of the church, and that's what we'll talk about when we get back. This is from the album called Focused Vision. That is the incredible group of voices and musical talent from the Children of St. Gregory, 2002 was when we recorded that. That I'm so proud of that recording. It happens to be called Focused Vision. The entire idea is to focus our vision on God. It was a CD that was produced by our dear friend Autumn Krikorian and made available, I mean, in places you can't imagine until today. This is true story. Until today, I get stopped because in a lot of the convalescent homes, nursing homes, they use this for Sunday morning worship. It's the entire Divine Liturgy. So I'll tell you a funny story. Just it was last year sometime. I was at a convalescent home and talking to a group of people, and the nurse overheard while I was praying. She says, "Your voice sounds so familiar." And I said, "Well, I don't know. It's, I come here. You may have heard me." She says, No. I know where that voice is, but I can't place it. Anyway, I met with a few people, talked, and then she came running over. And she says, "I know where I've heard that. You're the one who does that, the church service for us every Sunday." And lo and behold, yeah, they had this big boom box. Literally, it was one of those old type boom box with the huge, huge speakers. And our Focused Vision CD was right there, and they play it throughout the week, and especially for Sunday morning worship. It's the Divine Liturgy of the Armenian Church, sung by the young voices of the St. Gregory Armenian Church in Pasadena, 2002. It was really an incredible labor of love, and one that I'm so proud to put our name to it, because it has really lasted through time. What is that? Almost 20 years, 17, 18 years. And still we get comments, still we get people asking for it. And anyway, that was one of the hymns from Focused Vision. I thought it was an appropriate one. As we're talking about our children, what we're doing with our children, how to keep God in focus in their lives, and also to put it all together with my dear friend Autumn Krikorian. Today we just concluded a funeral service for his brother. It all comes together, doesn't it? Always does. Monday's child, Tuesday's child, which child isn't remembered? Which day of the week isn't remembered? That could be a Jeopardy question, huh? Tournament of Champions. Well, it's easy. You could figure it out if you figure out how many syllables in each day of the week and figure out that, you know, melody has to have a way of reproducing. Which day of the week doesn't have a child? Yeah, one of those questions I'll throw out, right? Listen, you figure that out, I'll send you a copy of A Focused Vision. Did you like that song? Okay, I'll send you a copy of that. Figure out in Lady Madonna which day of the week is not remembered. And you don't even need to listen to the song to know it. You could figure that out. Anyway, we are talking about God in the lives of our children. Keeping God alive, making God real in the lives of our children. Does that bother you when I say things like that? Keeping God alive? What do you mean it's in our power to keep God alive? Well, let me ask you this. When you close your eyes to God, when you reject God, how alive is he? Sure, he's in the world, but what happens when you reject God? Does he have a means of getting into your lives? Just throw something I'm throwing out. You know, during the 1960s, there was the death of God theology, and it was not too far off from what we're talking about today. It's basically, do you need God? Is God really important in our lives? There's a whole series of books that were authored. And really, the answer is very easy. It's either a yes or no, and do you want? Now, we have a listener. We have a member of our church community who is struggling with the issues of parenthood, of children, raising children in this secularized society, in this secular world. And it's gone beyond secularization. It's to a point right now where there's an outright rejection of God. So how do we keep God alive? Now, I said earlier about the Sunday school, and she alludes to this in her email. She says, we go to Sunday school, but my children aren't enthused about it. They've lost interest. And she says, what can I do to keep their interest, to keep them loving God and to believe in him? And as I said a few minutes ago, you know, I've been very fortunate that Susan, we work together on our Sunday schools by making our Sunday schools real. And this is what I mean by this. You have this corporate body. You have our church community, which gets together in the 168 hours a week. We have this hour and a half, 2 hours, say, that belong to God. And so we have designated that as church time. Sunday morning is church time. Okay, so we go. And what do? In many communities, you have similar time period for what is called Sunday school. Now, this is a foreign concept in Orthodoxy and in especially in the Armenian Church. And the proof of that, of its foreignness, is right in our Divine Liturgy itself. If you follow our Divine Liturgy, and there's a way, I know it's difficult, okay? Take out your books. But there is a portion. It's right after the congregation has been instructed. So let's understand the Divine Liturgy as this corporate body where we're all getting together. We are the big body of Christians. We get together Sunday morning. We're going to celebrate the resurrection. We get together. The priest walks into the church vested with the deacons and the acolytes. He has new clothes on and in preparing the Eucharist. The first order of business is to provide the spiritual meal. And so we share in the readings. We read the letters of St. Paul. We read prophecy, and we read a gospel passage, after which the priest gives a commentary, which is called the sermon, about those readings that were just given. Now, I know you go to a church right now and it's far from that, because most priests are pretty smart and they're saying that, hey, nobody comes early because they have been conditioned to come towards the end of church. So let's keep the sermon, that one little variable where I get to talk to the people, right? Let's keep that towards the end of the service. Now, it shouldn't be there, but it is. The reality is it is at the end. No. In fact, one of the things that really irritates me now that I go to different churches to do services, it has turned tradition to do the sermon during the Haidmet, just before the Haidmet, the Lord's Prayer. And this is kind of very difficult for me because it requires you as the priest to turn your back on the blessed and consecrated sacrament. The sacrament sitting at the altar, and you as the priest have to now turn your back to that. I can't go there right now, okay? That's a whole different story. But the proper place for it is, and think about it in these terms, okay? The gospel, the scriptural passages are read, the priest comments on it, gives his sermon at that point. And by the way, the Episcopals and the Catholics still do it this way because, of course, their people understand that the Holy Divine Liturgy is one service. It's not a few pieces where you could come in and stroll in anytime you want. Have a smoke before you come and then get in there. And then if you feel bored, go out there and have a cup of coffee and then come back in. No, there's no such thing. So you go in the beginning and you leave at the end. And so the priests in the Catholic, Roman Catholic tradition and in Episcopal tradition have this luxury of having a community that understands that corporate worship. And so they give the sermon at that point. So right after the scriptural passages, the priest talks, he speaks, he instructs. And now, right after the creed, in other words, everybody gets together and now says, this is what we believe. We believe in the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, in the universal Catholic Church, right? This is what the Nicene Creed is all about. And then we anathematize anybody who doesn't believe that, like, get out. Then at that point, What do the deacons say? Mi vok herachayitz, mi vok terahavaditz, ye mi vok habashcharotz. What they're proclaiming is saying, let none of the catechumens, that word, by the way, yerechayitz, it's not yerecha, it's yerachayitz, and it has that small little difference in the letter is the difference between a child, which is yerecha, and a catechumen. Now it's one who is now studying to be a convert, someone who is preparing for baptism. So he's saying none of the catechumens, none of the of little faith, and none of the penitents. In other words, you've done something wrong, you've confessed, you are in a state of sin, but the priest has said you must, here's your penance, you must do this or that, and so it's prescribed some penance for you. So the deacon is saying, if you are in that state, mercesi astvazain chortus, you are now being asked to stay clear. Do not draw near. Do not come near. Okay? And at that portion of the Holy Divine Liturgy, what would happen? That group of people, the catechumens, those people who were in penance, those people who were not ready to receive communion, would be rounded up and taken outside what we now call the narthex area, the outside, for instruction. Right? They would be taken outside, and that was your original, go ahead, say it, that was your Sunday school. Okay, so you've now been instructed in the church by listening to Holy Scripture, by being given the Word of God through the priest that has given you a sermon, and now you're outside the area, and you are now learning your lesson, whatever it may be. Now, that is really where Sunday school belonged. And like I said, it was very fortunate that we worked together in our communities, whether it was in Cupertino, in Pasadena, or in Glendale, and to make sure that the Sunday school understood that it's not outside of the church that it belongs, but it's inside of that body of believers. And we would come to church. We'd bring the kids to church. Because here's the problem with it. You go through a Sunday school experience from grade 1 to 12, 1 to 10, whatever it may be, and you come to church and your family is inside of the church or maybe at the local coffee shop, but you have no clue what the Divine Liturgy is about. So at the end, at the conclusion of your years of Sunday school, you are being now asked to come and join the corporate body of believers and be a member of the church. And then you walk into the church and you say, what? What? Wait. What is this? This is like a foreign experience to me. I learned about Noah's Ark. I learned about, you know, Jacob and his Technicolor dream coat. And now, what? Where am I now? Church, and you guys are talking what? What are you saying over there? You know what I'm saying? Basically, when you do Sunday school simultaneously, at the same time as church, you are now depriving your children from the body of the worshipers. And over time again, I've seen this in our churches. The kids that stay next to their parents through the Divine Liturgy, as difficult as it may seem to you, it's that complete absorption. It is that complete holistic way of accepting. And of course, it requires not just parents. It requires the sensitivity of priests and choir leaders and deacons and parish councils. In other words, it requires a sensitivity of the entire community. That means when the children come and they get fidgety, not to go out there and say, hey, stop that. I can't stand that when they do that. Hey. Every congregation has one of those, you know. The kids come into church. You as a priest are so excited because now what you're doing on Sunday morning seems to make sense, right? And so you've been encouraging the kids to come in. And, you know, it's a long service. Kids will be kids. They get fidgety. And you always get somebody, hey, or the one that I just really can't understand. They go, shh. Can you imagine being a little kid? I'm sure you can, because we all been there, right? Being a little kid, just seeing that ugly face just look at you and go, shh. This is your house. This is the house of God. Make that sound. Make that sound. Do you think that your little child's sound is any worse than what's coming out of the mouths of some of the people? To such belong the kingdom of heaven. In fact, that statement was so important to us that when we started our church in Glendale, I've had the good fortune of two of the three churches that I've built of having to be able to put the writing up over the altar. And in Glendale, when we did it, we put, let the children come to me, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. Let the children come. Do not hinder them. Let them come forward. I have a beautiful story that a gentleman called me last week. 87-year-old man, Sam is his name. He called me last week right after we had done the tribute to Catholicos Vazgen. Last week's podcast was all about that, if you want to take a listen. Anyway, Sam called me. He's 87 years old. He was asking when the event was going to take place, and sadly I had to tell him that it was just the night before. You missed it by a day. And he said, I have a wonderful story that I wanted to pass along to you. And he told me the story, and I said, I will pass it along to my listeners. I will pass it along to my congregation. And he told me this story when he was still a young man. He was working in one of the Los Angeles hotels when His Holiness the Catholicos Vazgen I was coming, 1960. And he was a guest at that hotel, and Sam was working, I guess, in room service, or who knows what he was. He was an employee of the hotel. And he says, I knew that the Catholicos, the head of our church, was going to be at that hotel. So he says, I went up to his room, and I was greeted by the bishop and a couple priests and a couple of the security detail. And they said, what do you want? And he says, well, this is my Catholicos is here. I want to get a blessing. And they says, what do you think? The Catholicos is going to bless you? And they literally told him to take a hike. Like, get lost. You know, you don't belong here. And he says, as I was leaving, the Catholicos heard that what they were saying to me. And he came out of his room and he says, what does this young man want? They said, Your Holiness, he wants to come and see you. He says, well, let him come. And he says, I came. He says, he gave me a blessing. I wanted a picture with him. The photographer was there. He says, would you mind taking a picture of me and the Catholicos? And the photographer said, sure, I will, if you will take a picture of me with the Catholicos. So they, you know, they exchanged pictures. What a beautiful story. And then Sam told me, he says, it reminded me of that scriptural passage where the disciples say, keep the children away. And Jesus says, just the opposite. Let the children come to me, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven. And I think this is the beginning point of the answer to this question. To this question, how to keep God real, how to keep God in the lives of our children, how to awaken faith. It's like never push him out. It's like to understand that God is all around, and to such belong the kingdom of heaven. Let your children experience God, Christ. It's not necessary that they go through the avenues that we have prescribed. I mean, when you think about the world that we have today, have we made such a great deal about our world that we feel comfortable saying to the kids, like, learn to do it our way? How about understanding to such belong the kingdom of heaven, and celebrating with them, celebrating their expressions? Now, this is difficult. It's easier said, but this is where it comes to the point of saying it's not going to be the obligation of my church, although it should be. But do you remember a couple minutes ago I said it requires the priest, the deacons, the choir leader, the parish council, everyone to work together? Now, that's an awful lot of people to bring together. I wish it would work. But there's certain dynamics in churches which prevent that from working. And until the leadership from top can give this direction, and I'm glad to see that it's happening in places, but it's not there right now, okay? That direction should come from family. Do not relinquish the right to your children to others. Do it in the family. Celebrate God in your families. And it's the simple things of sitting at meals together and starting a meal with a prayer. That prayer is irrelevant what you say. God is good. God is great. Bless us the food. It's irrelevant. What's important is that you do it and then jump off from there. Why did we bless the table? Why did we say the prayer? What happened today in your life? What were the experiences? Did we find God expressing? Oh, today I was with a friend. My friend was very sad. And talk about that sadness. Understand that God's presence is all around us, that we usher in. And you tell your child, you know, when you did that for your friend, when you were with your friend during lunchtime, even though she was really upset and everything, you know, you brought a little ray of sunshine. That's God. That's what you brought in. That's God's presence at that moment. In other words, let children understand they are not outside of God, but they are inside of God and God is inside of them. What? Sounds weird, huh? That I said the words are irrelevant on the prayer? Well, that goes, it's part of the armadoxy, right? Prayer is not conversation with God alone. It's conversation with yourself. You think God doesn't know you're grateful for the food? Of course he does, but you need to say it. You need to articulate it, to say what it means to be grateful for the food, to understand that your life is one of celebration of God's goodness to you, for the food, for the enjoyment, for the laughter, for the ability to reach out to others. Let children experience God, not outside of themselves, but inside. And you know who said that? This was a famous saint called Saint Nectarios. It's one of the most beautiful sayings of all the saints, of all the old saints. But this one I particularly like. In fact, I have a small little card that's next to my bedpost because I need to remind myself. What he said was, seek God daily. Yeah, you put it by your bedpost so when you wake up, you see this. Seek God daily, but seek him in your heart, not outside of it. Isn't that beautiful? Where is God? God is all around, inside and outside of you. The kingdom of heaven is right now. It's happening right now, inside and outside of you. Let me see if I can give you the entire quote. Here it is. Okay. Seek God daily, but seek him in your heart, not outside of it. And when you find him, stand with fear and trembling, like the cherubim and the seraphim, for your heart has become a throne of God. But in order to find God, become humble as dust before the Lord. For the Lord abhors the proud, whereas he visits those who are humble in heart. Wherefore, he says, to whom will I look but to him that is meek and humble in heart? One more, okay? The divine light illuminates the pure heart and pure intellect because these are susceptible to receiving light. Whereas impure hearts and intellects, not being susceptible to receiving illumination, have an aversion to the light of knowledge, the light of truth. They like darkness. God loves those who have a pure heart. Listen to their prayers. grant them their requests that lead to salvation, reveals himself to them, and teaches the mysteries of the divine nature. Okay, now we've got to put it in perspective. Purity of heart. Is there anything more pure than a child? I mean, that child knows where it's at. Now, unfortunately, as they grow older, and this is coming back to the original question, what do I do to keep faith alive, to keep God alive inside of my kid? Unfortunately, they're being bombarded, and literally, there are stuff coming into their ears, into their eyesight, and 24/7, they're being bombarded with information. And the one that you have to watch out for is not about, you know, this is what you need to believe. It's about disrespect. It's about having that lackadaisical attitude towards life, like not respecting it enough to throw themselves into the mix, to be kind, to be gentle. And so, in opposition, to run interference to all this. Look, you can't do anything about the schools. People they've come to me and they've said, we got to get prayers back in the school. No, you don't want prayers in the school. Let prayers teach reading, writing, and arithmetic. Okay, that's what schools should be doing. Because the minute you open it up to prayers in school, it means everybody has a right to pray. And I'll be honest, I don't want everybody's prayer. I want a prayer of humility. I don't want a prayer that says, you know, look at me, I'm the greatest, and, you know, I'm going to heaven and you're not. Too bad for you. I don't want that kind of prayer. I want a prayer that says, open my heart, make me an instrument of your peace. Jesus, wisdom of the Father, grant me your wisdom so that I may speak, think, and do that which is good in your sight. So the answer is not to change the school. The answer is not to change the churches, because the churches, God bless them, they've got a lot. And until we can get to a system where our priests are running the churches based on the gospel rather than the people that are in there, you've got some problems. So what's the one place where you have control, total, absolute control? That's you, your family. You can't change others, but you can change yourself and make God alive in your families. Take some time to turn off some of the media, to say that. And I said it a few minutes ago, the easiest place is at the dinner table. It's at the breakfast table, wherever you are sitting. Take time during those few minutes to make sure that along with the prayer, there is a little discussion. And listen to your children. Everything doesn't have to be a lecture to them, like, no, these are bad. But listen, let them know that their opinions matter, that what they are sensing as reality is very, very important. Now we're getting into whole child rearing, and that's a whole other story. But the question to start off is, how do we keep God in focus for our children? It's by making God in focus for us. Okay, yeah, I was trying to go a little longer. Piano players here. Susie's in the booth next to Ken. Take it away.
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazquez.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, for that invitation to participate. And thank you to all of you, to all of our listeners, for your kind words, your gestures of thanks and support. Oh, they go a long way to keep us moving forward in this ministry. Going to be up in the Fresno area this weekend. It happens to be Labor Day. It is one of those holidays here in the United States that we really enjoy. It also is a point of sadness, too, because it brings an end to summer, and that, of course, means an end to play. But in this case, I don't know, an end to summer might be welcome considering how hot and it has been in this area. But wherever you happen to be, I hope you're enjoying the little last bits of summer. And, of course, those of you down under, hope you're enjoying the last bits of winter, right? Is that how we say it? Do you guys call it winter, or is it summer that happens to have a winter tone to it? Interesting. I'll have to find that out. Love to hear from you, of course. That about does it for today's show. We're heading out to Sasnashen in a few weeks. We have a big project over there. Do check us out on the web, inhisshoes.org. You'll find information, especially about the Sasnashen project. I hope you enjoyed today's show. There'll be show notes that are available that'll have links to the topics that we talked about. And especially check out the one about St. Nectarius. I wasn't planning on doing that. Just kind of like crawled in and came in on that. But nah. No crawling in when it comes to the next step. Everything just has a place, how it fits, and it all comes together. Want to thank you all for joining us. Hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. On behalf of our wonderful crew, Susie, our producer, Ken, our technical director, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off-balance. Top minutes.